here we are at MMS 2012. I managed to corner Josh Heller before he goes off and does a session. And he's going to be here talking to us today about...
We're going to talk today about dynamic access control in Windows Server 8.
Well, that's actually very interesting because it's one of those new features that has been talked about, but maybe a little bit difficult for an IT pro to kind of get their head around from a file system perspective. So why don't you tell me a little bit about, first of all, what this solution actually is going to solve for the IT pro?
So basically what Dynamic Access Control looks to do is offer a new way for the IT pro to help apply classification of the data that exists in file servers all over the organization, and then enhance that with new ways to apply access policy to that data centrally within the Active Directory that they've already got deployed.
Okay, so using existing tools, but giving an extra layer of protection that is going to end up helping them in the long run.
And centralizing it.
And centralizing
it. Rather than having to manage access policy on hundreds or thousands of file servers spread all over the world, now we can manage that centrally through the Active Directory tools that we all know and love.
Now, this is different than going through and doing the traditional NTFS file permissions to be able to secure access to different stuff. This is going to the next level as far as usability, as far as the stuff you can do with file systems and with data that's being classified in your system. That's right?
Correct. So it doesn't replace NTFS file permissions. You know, NTFS file permissions, they're important.
They're not going away.
They're not going away.
Okay, good.
What we're talking about is adding to them. So we're looking at making it simpler for IT pros and file server administrators to create those file permission sets and apply them. So if you can do it in one place, then apply those in a distributed fashion, it's less work for them while building up a more secure file system infrastructure.
Now, is this something that they're going to want to be applying net new greenfield deployments of new file systems for new organizations, or is this something they can implement on their existing file systems now?
It's actually something that they can go back and retrofit in existing file servers today.
That's good to know.
It does require Windows Server 8 file servers. That's important. But there's no need to rip and replace all of your file servers, all of your Active Directory. We've made this really simple to step into, you know, as they go. Nobody's asking anybody to rip everything out.
Okay, well, good thing about the no rip and replace, it's very good. Now, I do need to ask as well, does it matter from a client perspective what client systems these clients are accessing these Windows 8 servers on?
That's a great question. I would love to see all of our customers upgrade to Windows 8 clients today, but we know that that's not a reality. So instead, what we're looking at is most of the features and functionality of Dynamic Access Control are available in Windows 7 clients as well as Windows 8. There's a handful of enhanced features that we are building in specifically to Windows 8 clients, including things like access denied remediation, which we'll look at in a little bit.
Okay, not too bad. Why don't you actually take a little bit of a break and just show me what a user experience looks like for someone who is granted access and someone who may be denied as well.
Sure, that's great. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to build out a demo, and we're looking at a couple different user experiences. We're going to start with Ashley, and in this case, Ashley is a new employee to Contoso Corporation. She's been hired into the finance department. Today's her first day, and like a lot of employees, she's going to start. She's got her laptop, but maybe she doesn't have the access she needs. We've always had this problem where we haven't been able to tell people why they don't have access and help them fix that problem easily.
It was just access denied message, and that's it.
It's random access denied messages. It prompts help desk calls, and even when it gets to the help desk may not necessarily know, how do I solve this problem for the user?
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is solve that with access denied remediation. So let's take a look.
Cool.
So here I am with my client, and I'm going to go ahead and log in as Ashley. Remember, Ashley is our new employee to Contoso Corp. We're going to start on the Windows 8 desktop, and she knows that the first thing she needs to do in her job is to access the file server where all of the finance documents live.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing she's going to do is just open up a file share, and the finance share happens to be on my file server, which is file 1 beta on the file share. So she's going to go ahead and just choose that. And up, there's a problem. So clearly, she hasn't been given the access that she needs to this particular file share. You'll notice, though, that the error message is much more descriptive. It's basically saying, you know, there's a problem. It's not giving her a cryptic error message. It's not giving her some sort of hexadecimal indicator of, you know, that she's never going to be able to figure out on her own. It's basically saying there is a problem, and here's how to solve it.
Yep.
So she has the ability now to just request assistance. So she can go ahead and request assistance, and it's. I want to stop for a second and just sort of explain that not only is this, you know, easy to look at for the end user, we've actually customized this so that the IT pro can actually configure this centrally through group policy and make this a pretty sophisticated interaction. In this scenario, we're actually going to look at how she can request this, and it's going to send an email out to the file content owner.
So I was about to say, not just a matter of simplifying life for the end user, but also for the people at the other end that have to remediate this issue, they have to fix it up, they now get the details for who is this person in the first place.
Correct, yeah, and we're not only going to do that, we also have the ability to do things like enabling, you know, URL remediation. So if we require electronic training to get to a certain level of access, they can actually click on a hyperlink, and using identity management software like Forefront Identity Manager, the user can actually self-remediate their issue and actually get into the data that they need to access with no interaction from IT at all. So it helps IT save a lot of money.
Oh man, that's sick. That's cool.
So what we're going to do, though, in this simple example, we're going to, you know, Ashley gets the opportunity to explain why she needs access.
Okay. Now, obviously, not to derail from the demo, but this looks very, very much SharePoint-like as far as the error message where it comes from. I'm glad to see this from an administrator perspective.
And, you know, it's not accidental. You know, we look at usability, and then the usability enhancements that came in SharePoint around the ability to help users help themselves is an important thing. And you'll notice one of the big trends in Windows Server 8 is all around, and System Center 2012 is all around self-serviceability. So we want to basically give users the ability to help themselves, empower the end user, while not taking away from the level of control and oversight that IT has. So Ashley's now asked for, you know, she's explained that I need access, I'm a new employee, I just started today. So she can then go ahead and send this message. And what happens is we're going to send the request. It's going to tell her that the request was successfully sent. And what we're going to do is we're going to simulate, you know, the administrator experience, in this case actually the file owner experience, where we're going to log in as Jason. And in this example, Jason's actually a file server administrator. He owns that finance data. Jason's going to go ahead and on his desktop open up Outlook. And within Outlook, he's actually received an email from the file server explaining that, you know what, Ashley has requested access. It shows the justification. But most importantly, it doesn't just tell him that she didn't get access. It tells him why she didn't get access. So and he can make a decision. Because you know what? The full control, modify, basically all of her permissions are blocked. And it's telling him why that access is limited. And we know that that access is limited because the finance department access. What you haven't seen in this example is file department access is actually a centralized access policy. That central access policy lives within Active Directory and describes the level of, you know, credentials that you need to access file access finance data on the file server.
Yeah. I love how it's all there, very simple, email, and gives you the reason why from a centralized policy perspective. Now, what does this look like from an end user, so not an end user, from an IT pro perspective for how to configure it? Is it cumbersome to configure this?
It's not at all. So really, we have a great tool in Active Directory. Active Directory is used by nearly everybody. So what we want to do is help IT use the tools they're already comfortable with to help, you know, manage these kind of issues. So what we've done is within Active Directory, we've now enabled IT pros take advantage of all the attributes. In other words, in Active Directory, your department could be set to finance. We can now make access control decisions based on those values.
Okay.
So in this case, what's happening is Ashley doesn't have access to the finance data because her department isn't set correctly. As an IT pro, all I need to do is go into my Active Directory, use the computers tool or my Active Directory Administrative Center, set Ashley's department to finance. All Ashley has to do is log out, log back in to get a new ticket, and she'll be able to access that data.
Is that the same as doing a group membership change, or is that really just an attribute change we're talking about here?
It's an attribute change.
The fact that it's an attribute, not a group membership change.
We've been making access control decisions based on group membership forever.
Yeah.
The problem is that, you know, group membership isn't controlled by anything other than, you know, an administrator's oversight. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have identity management fully rolled out, that's great. A lot of our customers don't. So what happens is they might have tools like an HR management system feeding attributes, like the department of a particular user. What we don't have is any way for, you know, smart grouping decisions to get made outside of those IDM platforms. What dynamic access control and, you know, the implementation of claims within Active Directory is letting us do is make those decisions based on the attributes within Active Directory.
I see visions of automation going on here that I would have loved to have had when I was administering Active Directory, man.
You know
this
what?
Is crazy.
We're in a world where, you know, the growth of servers, growth of file servers is growing exponentially. What we have to do is work with our IT pros who are being asked to do more with less and give them the tools and automation that they need so that they can continue to do their jobs as their environment grows.
So how about from the configuration perspective? I mean, the great little email to show us, you know, why, what's going on, how that fits up. Why don't you show me a little bit about what the IT pro would do from a configuration side? You know, not necessarily the setup, but just how is it managed on a regular basis?
Sure, that's a great question. So we're going to shift courses a little bit, and we're actually going to look at the file server experience that an IT pro would go through. We're going to move over to the file server, and within the file server, I've opened up the File Server Resource Manager.
Okay.
The FSRM existed in Windows 2002, but we've made some significant changes to it. The things we're really going to focus on today are these things called classification rules and file management tasks. We had the ability to do classification rules within 2008 R2. The difference was it happened on a scheduled basis. We could make decisions, but those decisions only take effect on a scheduled basis as much as 24 hours in between. So we've made a fundamental shift in the way that we manage file servers in Windows Server 8 to basically allow us to do continuous classification, which is a near real-time management of files as they get added to the file system.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to take a look here at one particular classification rule. And again, this is through the eyes of a file server administrator or an IT pro.
Yep.
I've got a classification rule that I've configured that we're calling high PII, or personally identifiable information. I'm going to go ahead and look within that classification rule, and there's only a few tabs to deal with. One of the things is scope, so I basically have to make a decision of where am I going to scope this rule? Where does this rule take effect? And what you see is I've basically scoped this to the different data shares that I've got on my file server.
Okay.
The next thing we have to do is determine what do we do with it. So now that we've scoped it, how do we manage it? What do we do with it? And the first thing that we have to do is determine what kind of, how are we going to assign classification to those files? How do we apply that taxonomy? There's a few different options that we have. We can do this using a folder classification. In other words, any data that exists within a specific folder gets classified a certain way. We can do it using PowerShell scripts, but one of the most powerful ways we can do this is actually determining a file's classification based on the contents of the file itself. In other words, remove location from the equation and make this simpler for the end user. They don't have to remember where to put the information because we can automatically classify that information appropriately.
So you're talking about properly identified metadata tagged files inside Office and other documents and that sort of stuff.
Correct.
The end user sets them up and then these rules automatically apply.
Completely correct. So in this example, we're going to go ahead and say we're going to do a content classifier, and we have to configure a parameter. In other words, what are we looking for in these files?
Mm-hmm.
And this is an incredibly simple example, but what I'm basically doing is I don't even have to match on strings. I can even match on regular expressions. So what we're actually looking at here is a regular expression, a very simple regular expression, that identifies a social security number pattern. We're looking for 3 characters -2 characters -4 characters.
So this isn't even the metadata. This is actually the contents of the file?
The contents of the file itself.
Because we all know how good users are at classifying the metadata tags on your document folders.
You know, end users want to help IT, but they also want to be able to do their jobs.
Yeah.
We need to make it easy for the end users to do their job, which isn't classifying data, and in the same time, you know, leverage IT automation to help classify these files and help the end user. So we've got this regular expression that's going to go through and identify any file with a social security number. The next thing we're going to do is then assign a property. So what we've said is we want to assign a property, or that metadata, in this case, personally identifiable information equal high. So anytime we find a social security number and a piece of information, we want to set that attribute to high. What's interesting is these properties actually are derived from Active Directory. We don't have to configure this on every single file server.
Okay.
I do it once in AD, and we push it out through group policy.
That's what directories are all about, man. That's awesome.
So now that we've done this, we can actually build on this. So now we're not only going to classify files, we can do something with the files we've classified. In this example, I've built a file management task. So it's great to classify your data, but classification doesn't do much unless you've got policy to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
In this example, I've built a task that's going to basically RMS protect or add rights management protection to any file where the PII value is set to high, or in other words, any file that contains a social security number, because we want to keep information like social security numbers, employee records, customer records safe. Again, I've defined a scope, and now I've got an action. And again, some of these were actually available in 2008 R2. One of the significant enhancements that we've made is we can now natively apply RMS protection right out of the box with no use of third-party tools or sort of customization.
Mm-hmm.
I can now just say apply RMS encryption. I can either select a template or I can use manual settings for anybody that's familiar with rights management.
Yeah.
What we do is based on a condition. So in this case, we're basing it on the condition that the personally identifiable information value is set to high. So do you want to take a look at how this actually looks to the end user?
Yeah, I would say this looks awesome from a configuration perspective. Let's see what this end result comes out as.
So we're going to add yet one more person to our cast of characters. We're going to actually add in Ben. In this case, Ben is actually a finance employee. He's been with the company for some time. He's got the ability and rights granted to him to access data on the finance share and create content. But at the same time, Ben's responsibility is to manage that content, create that content, not to know how to classify that content. All right, so what we're going to do is actually take a look at the client experience of how this is going to look to Ben, who in this case is our file owner.
Okay.
Ben is going to log in. He's going to create some content that contains personally identifiable information. Then we're going to watch to see what the file server does with that.
Okay.
So here I am. I'm logged in as Ben. I'm going to go ahead and move to my desktop. I'm going to open up my finance share. Now, you remember, Ashley didn't have access to this, but because Ben has his finance department set correctly, Ben can actually log in and access that finance share.
It still blows my mind that all it is an attribute in Active Directory, man. That's just wicked.
So we're going to go ahead and do a new Word document. We're going to say this is Ashley SSN, because you know what? He needs to maybe create a finance record for Ashley, his new employee.
And it's just because it's not obvious enough that it says SSN, we're going to actually...
We're going to make it really obvious. Okay, yeah. Okay. So now here we are, we're in Microsoft Word. I'm going to get nagged about not activating Word. And then what we're going to do is go back and actually create that record. So I'm going to go ahead and just going to insert a fake social security number for Ashley. You remember, it's that 3-2-4 pattern that we applied within the regular expression. I'm going to go ahead and save that document. I'm going to go ahead and close Word, and we're going to look at the file share. You'll notice that we're actually watching this go from 13K. I'm going to go ahead and refresh. Now it's 131K, and everybody's always like, why does it get so big?
Okay,
because we just encrypted that file. So in the time it took for me to basically close Word and do a refresh, I'm going to show you what we did. So we've done two things. Let's look at the properties of that file itself. You'll notice now we've actually got the personally identifiable information value set to high.
Yep.
That wouldn't have happened unless we had that file classification rule running.
Yep.
The other thing that we can kind of close out with, I'm going to go ahead and open this. I'm opening this as the file owner, and Word's going to automatically pop up that message that basically prompts me to go
ahead and
basically hit the RMS server.
Yep.
So again, we've removed the need for the user to remember to make those two or three mouse clicks to add RMS protection to a file that with a social security number should certainly be RMS protected.
So this is almost like a CYB cover your butt thing.
This is exactly a CYB thing. That's
okay, correct. Now I got to hit you up on what the requirements are. So if I had an environment right now that has a whole slew of different file servers that are running 2008 R2 or 2003, how do they get to be able to take advantage of something like this?
So that's a great question. So for any file server where you want to take advantage of things like continuous classification, take advantage of the automatic RMS protection sort of out of the box, you do need to upgrade those servers to Windows Server 8.
Okay.
The good news is that upgrade process is going to be really, really clean and straightforward for anybody already running 2008 R2.
That's good to know.
So you do have to have Windows Server 8 file servers. The other thing I want to mention is that you do have to have, we recommend at least one Windows 8 domain controller in every one of your Active Directory sites. When I log into Active Directory, I need to pick up the fact that I now not only have user SIDs, group SIDs, but I also have that claim data.
Mm-hmm.
That claim data has to be issued from a Windows 8 domain controller.
And obviously the servers are going to be trying to check and find where's the closest Active Directory domain controller
correct.
That's running server 8.
Exactly.
To this.
That's why I recommend
so
one in every site. Yeah, at the same time, it can stay mixed mode. We don't require you to go to native mode just for dynamic access control.
Yeah.
So we look at it as a pretty painless upgrade. You know, adding a couple DCs, especially now that we support virtualized domain controllers, shouldn't be a huge deal, as well as upgrading file servers, generally one of the lower risk upgrades.
Okay. And from a pilot perspective, to be able to pilot this, very simple. 2008 R2 Active Directory domain controller in one of your pilot sites, your file server up there, server 2008 upgraded to Windows Server 8 in that same site, and then you're off and running the races.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Josh. Taking up your time.
You've
got a session coming up.
I do.
Appreciate it. And have a good day, sir.
Great. Thank you very much.
Cheers.